I tensed up and Tevin must have felt it all through my body beside him. I really, really wanted to burst Floyd's bubble right there at the table, call him out on his shit. Tevin must have sensed it. He changed the subject.
Hey, you two, he said, addressing Floyd and Courtney. Gemistry and I are thinking about spending New Year's Eve in New Orleans. You should join us.
Courtney looked concerned. Gemistry, can you travel that far with the pregnancy and all? When are you due again?
Close to Valentine's Day, I replied. February 17th, to be exact, but we all know that it's not going to go down like that.
Everyone at the table laughed.
Oh no, little man is going to make his appearance when he is good and ready, Tevin said.
But to answer your question, Dr. Horton said that everything is fine with the baby so I can fly. I reached over and took Tevin by the hand.
Besides, you know from experience, it pays to be married to a doctor so you always have emergency medical care.
No doubt, she said. Tevin pulled his hand away.
Yeah, it does pay to be married to a doctor.
I was stunned that he would come at me like that in front of them.
Tevin, please, don't, not tonight.
Okay, whatever, he replied,
and took a sip of his Arnold Palmer.
You really need to make my boy an honest man, Floyd interjected.
Nobody asks you shit, and you are far from honest, I thought. Let me put everyone out of their misery, speculation, and need to express opinions. I was hoping that the trip to New Orleans, which was my suggestion, could also serve as our honeymoon. I honestly had no idea that Tevin planned to invite you, but that's cool. The more the merrier.
Everyone fell silent. I looked at Tevin. Did you hear what I said? Can we get married in December and go on our honeymoon?
Tevin grinned. You already know my answer. I only wish we could do it sooner.
What the hell? Cave in and get it over with, I thought.
Fine. I love you. I want to marry you. So you pick the date and I'm there.
Tevin stared at me.
Really?
Yes. So when?
It's Friday. We have to go apply for the license. It takes 3 days to process and then we can pick it up.
He paused to add dates up in his head.
How about next Saturday?
I shrugged.
Works for me, on one condition.
Tevin leaned over and kissed me on the cheek.
Anything.
That you get us a suite at the Mandarin Oriental that night to consummate our marriage.
Done.
And that you still take me to New Orleans for New Year's Eve.
Done.
And that you let me switch out that hideous blue paint you bought for TJ's nursery.
Courtney said, "Aw, you're calling him TJ already. Awesome."
Done, Tevin said. But I thought you said on one condition.
I might as well go for broke, I said and laughed.
Might as well, Floyd said and then rolled his eyes.
Then he caught himself slipping and grinned.
That's great about the wedding. I'll put in tomorrow for the day off.
Cool, I said, trying to suppress a frown. I was feeling some kind of way about Floyd.
So, where are we going to do this? Courtney asked with excitement. Is the Justice of the Peace even available on Saturdays?
I'm sure they are, I said. But I'm going to ask one of my co-workers' husbands to do the honors. I'm glad that the two of you will be able to come. I looked at Tevin. Do you want to invite your parents?
Of course. I'll see if either one of them can make it on such short notice.
I reminded him. We could have waited so they could definitely make it.
Nope. He shook his head, not waiting.
Then let's do the damn thing.
When we got home that night, I couldn't go another minute without some sex. Tevin pulled the car into the garage since it was getting chilly outdoors. During the warmer months, we both had parked in the driveway. Now we were both utilizing bays in his 3-car garage on the regular. I went ahead inside. He was getting some bags out of the trunk. We had been shopping earlier that day for some things for TJ. I hoped that he planned to leave that hideous paint in the car.
It was definitely going back. We had agreed on blue for the room, obvious choice, but the shade he had selected was bland and too dark. I desired something more vibrant. I also planned to hire the art teacher from school, Mr. Ritchie, to paint a colorful mural on the biggest wall. I was going to leave that wall white for now and let him come up with something creative. He had asked me what I had in mind, and I told him that I was asking him because I wanted his imagination at work, not mine. He was scheduled to come by the next weekend. Now I had to reschedule. I was getting married. By the time Tevin walked in from the garage, I was sitting in the kitchen, butt naked, with my right leg thrown up on the table and two of the fingers from my left hand exploring my pussy.
"Oh, damn," Tevin said, dropping the bags on the floor. "Excited much?"
"What can I say?" I replied.
"You turn me on so much."
The thought of finally becoming Mrs. Tevin Harris has me all hot and bothered.
"Baby, I don't want to hurt the baby." I sighed.
"Tevin, I've asked Dr. Horton several times if it was okay to have sex. We have months left until February, and I need you."
"And I'm not saying that I don't need you, baby. My thirst for you never ends."
"Then can you do me a favor and at least come drink at my fountain?" I pulled my fingers out and sucked on them, one at a time.
"You don't know what you're missing."
"Oh, I know it very well. I would know it anywhere." He chuckled and walked toward me.
"That's my pussy."
"Damn right it's your pussy, and you need to stop neglecting it. It's going to get a complex. Pussies can have low self-esteem. We don't want to have to put her in therapy."
Tevin laughed and kneeled beside me. I took my leg off the table and placed it over his left shoulder. He stared at my pussy like it was a rare diamond.
"God has made a lot of beautiful things in this world, but you are a masterpiece."
Whenever I was intimate with Tevin, he made me feel so unique and special. Other men in my past had never done that. Sure, they made me feel like they cared, but they never made me feel like I was one of a kind. Tevin did that for me, and I loved him all the more for it.
"You make me feel so exceptional," I said, running the fingers from my other hand through his hair.
"You always make me feel so damn special."
He gazed up into my eyes.
"That's because you are. You're everything to me, Gemistry. Everything. Sure, I'm passionate about my career. I've accomplished a lot in my lifetime and still have a long way to go, hopefully. But what good does it do a man to prosper if he loses his soul in the process? You are my soul."
Not sure how it happened, but I was crying. He wiped my tears.
"I'm so glad that you decided to finally allow me the honor of becoming your husband."
"Tevin, I never had any doubts about marrying you. That's not what it was about. I just..."
He placed three fingers over my lips.
"Shh. It doesn't matter whether you had any doubts or not. All that matters is that it's really happening."
He moved his hands down over my stomach.
"Everything is really happening. I've always wanted a family, a woman to come home to, a child to play with, and a legacy to leave behind."
I pulled Tevin's face to mine and kissed him intensely. We must have kissed for a good 10 minutes. It had been a while since we had shared a kiss so full of unspoken words and feelings. I was still crying, but it was all out of joy.
When we finished kissing, Tevin lowered his head and drank from my fountain.
Tevin. Chapter 32. When we are in love, We seem to ourselves quite different than what we were before. Blaise Pascal. Even though I had been married before, taking chemistry as my wife had an effect on me that was foreign to me. We got married at a small church in Northeast D.C. with about 30 people present. It could have been 300, 3,000, or just us, and I would have been ecstatic. Courtney and Floyd were there with their children, several of Gemistry's co-workers and their spouses, including Lilybeth and her husband, and both of my sisters came with their families and both of my parents. My father flew in from Sweden, and I was not the least bit surprised. It was interesting seeing my parents interact. Even though they discussed their offspring from time to time, they had not actually seen each other in several years. Daddy was happy for me, but I could tell that he was also sad about ruining the one good thing he ever had, his connection with my mother. What happened between them was the main reason why I would never, ever cheat on a woman. I watched the pain Mom had endured at the hands of my father, and there was no way that I could ever do that to another individual, much less someone that I loved. Too many men did the exact opposite. They followed in their father's footsteps and made a mockery out of marriage. That could never and would never be me. Chemistry walked down the aisle in a stunning, off-white, floor-length gown. Two of the students from the school choir, a male and a female, sang a duet for her entrance, "After All Is Said and Done," by Mark Nelson and Beyoncé. Both of us cried during the ceremony, along with everyone else, even Floyd. We had a reception on a chartered private yacht and sailed up and down the Potomac River for 3 hours. It was an amazing day. I got Chemistry the suite she'd requested at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, the presidential suite. The suite had 3 bedrooms, and it was more than 3,500 square feet. No, we did not need all of that, but Chemistry was worth every penny. We actually made use of most of the rooms, though. We made love like we had never made love before. After speaking to Dr. Horton myself a few days earlier, he had not only assured me that it was fine for us to have sex, but he also told me that Chemistry was sexually frustrated and had asked him to call me to discuss, one medical professional to another. She tickled me. Chemistry had gone on a website and found all these animated sex positions with the female on top. She had sent me a text with the link and instructed me to study up on them. I did, and was ready to rock her world, gently. I was not about to go for broke like most men claimed that they did on their wedding nights. It always tripped me out when my friends would brag about how they tore the pussy up instead of simply making love. They would share the intimate details and try to outdo each other. It was quite outlandish, but not unexpected. Men love to brag on their dicks, especially to other men. Once women reached a certain age, or status, it was a great turnoff for a man to brag on his sexual skills. Now, if women were feeble-minded and going through a dick drought, it was a different story. Those were the kind of chicks Floyd preyed on. I was so glad that Chemistry hadn't told Courtney about Floyd's wandering eyes and dick. I had not brought it up to her again. I didn't want to press my luck, and things were getting back to normal between Floyd and me. I'd forgiven him for not telling me about Chemistry's pregnancy in the beginning, the main reason being that I was not quite sure what I would have done if the roles had been reversed. As much as I would have liked to think that I would have told him, I wasn't 100% convinced of that. Chemistry emerged from the master bathroom of the suite in a lavender satin gown, freshly bathed and smelling like the ocean. I loved the way she played around with using different scents for bathing. She had told me once that she tried to use scents that matched the mood and location, kind of like a florist who makes bouquets based on the occasion. Since we had a suite overlooking the Potomac and had sailed the Potomac for the reception, I was feeling her flow. "You look so beautiful," I told her. I had taken a shower in another bathroom and was only wearing a pair of black pajama pants tied with a string. She giggled and ran her fingers through her hair in a seductive way. "Well, that makes about the 100th time you've told me that today." "It's the truth." I poured us 2 glasses of sparkling apple cider. Because of the pregnancy, we skipped the champagne. She walked over to me and I handed her a glass. "For you, Mrs. Harris." "I love the sound of that." I leaned in for a quick kiss. "Get used to it. It's your name now. Forever. And a day." We clinked our glasses together. "To us," we said in unison, entwined our arms, and took long gulps. Gemistry spilt a little on my chest when we were untangling our arms. "Let me get that," she said, and then licked the few drops off my chest. Then she went lower, sitting down on the sofa, and unfastening my pants with her teeth. She set her glass down on the coffee table, pulled my pants down, grabbed my dick, and said, "Let me get this, too." Gemistry had given me some off-the-chain head since we'd been together. She had never been able to take in all of my mass, but she was definitely more into it and more comfortable with it. But I still wasn't prepared for what came next. She started humming on the head of my penis and whispering, "I want to recite something that I wrote for this special occasion." She held on tight to my dick and looked up at me. "I penned a poem for my dick." "A poem?" I chuckled. "Let's hear it." She stared at the head of my dick, at the eye, and started reciting an actual poem. I was blown away, no pun intended. "I call this Glaze on My Donut. You are the glaze on my donut. The milk to my shake. The shake to my bake. The twinkle in my eye. The blue in my sky. You are the peanut to my butter. The sweet in my dreams. The sprinkle on my sundae. The spring in my step and the jewel on my crown. You are the beat of my heart. The flip to my flop. The..." I couldn't hold it in another second. I fell out laughing and took my dick out of her hand. "Baby?" "Yeah?" That shit doesn't rhyme." She laughed and then swatted me on my dick. "Well, you get the point. Yes, you like this dick." "I love this dick. So much so that I started to recite it at the wedding in front of everyone." I chuckled. "Mom would have loved it." Gemistry started sucking me off like she was starving, and it took me less than 3 minutes to explode in her throat. I almost fainted. "Damn, I'm gonna have to take a break before I can do anything else. You drained me," I said. "Nope, no damn breaks." She led me into the master bedroom and pushed me down on the bed on my back. Then she went over to her overnight bag, pulled something out, and put it behind her back. "What's that?" I asked, sitting up on my elbows. "You'll see. Close your eyes." I hesitated, so she asked, "You don't trust me, Tevin? You married me, but you don't trust me?" "Of course I trust you." I closed my eyes and waited to see what she was going to do next. She started sucking my dick again, gently, then took more and more of me into her mouth. Miraculously, I achieved another erection. Wow, I didn't think I could get hard again right now, I whispered. Your lips are magic. Then I felt something strange. Her mouth started contracting, in and out on my dick, but not like normal. I heard a buzzing noise, opened my eyes, and Gemistry had a vibrator on the side of her cheek, causing the sensation to ripple inside onto my dick. Damn, you're creative, I practically yelled. Oh, shit! By the time she was done with sucking my dick for the second round, she had my ass curled up in a fetal position behind that shit. She could have put the top of the ladder porn stars to shame with that head game. Did you like that, baby? She asked after I had come again. You see me laid up in bed like your little bitch, don't you? I joked, all the while trying to catch my breath. I'll be damned if Gemistry didn't act like a man on our wedding night and attempt to fuck me half to death. She had been serious about all those sex positions. She went to work and put me to work until I literally passed out about 3 a.m. We went to Sunday brunch at Georgia Brown's about noon and sat there like two lovesick puppies. The rest of the world ceased to exist. We fed each other and talked about our future. Both of us took guesses on how much TJ would weigh when he was born. Gemistry said 19 inches long and 6 pounds 11 ounces. I asked her, did she realize how damn big I was? I was thinking more like 23 inches long and at least 10 pounds. The devil is a liar, Gemistry exclaimed. I'm not giving birth to a toddler. When I informed her that I had actually weighed closer to 11 pounds at birth, she looked like she wanted to pass the hell out. Get the fuck out of here. No, I really did. You can call Mom and ask her if you don't believe me. She shook her head in dismay. If TJ is that big, I'd rather bypass even considering natural birth and go straight for the cesarean section. I chuckled. No one's giving you a C-section that's not needed, baby. It is needed. I have to protect my pussy. 10, 11 pounds, though? No. Well, Missy, it's not like you can control his size. Two things are for sure. He's coming, and you're the only one who can push him out. Like I said, C-section all the way, Big Meech, she said and giggled. Besides, if I push him out, his head might get all jacked up coming out of the birth canal. What if he wants to go bald one day, or ends up bald, and the shape of his head is deformed? You're tripping, baby, I replied, scooping some eggs up off my plate. I was starved. His head will be fine. I'm just saying. I've seen enough men with bald heads that look like a 2-year-old's Play-Doh project gone bad. Here's what we'll do. At your appointment next week, we'll ask Dr. Horton to guesstimate his size and go from there. Gemistry seemed pleased. So you agree? If he's too big, I can get cut. No. I agree that we can ask, and you're going to have to push his ass out, big head and all, unless there's a medical reason not to. Gemistry realized that it was a touchy subject for me. It was. The thought of something actually going wrong during TJ's birth terrified me. Okay, she said. I'm going to prepare myself for the madness. The things us women have to go through. I grinned. We're already signed up for Lamaze classes. It'll be fine. She rolled her eyes playfully. So both of us going in there and taking fake breaths is going to do exactly what when the time comes? You're not seriously planning to sit beside me going through the motions and acting like you know exactly what I'm feeling, are you? I didn't respond. It was a crazy concept now that she put it that way. I sure hope not. I can see me losing it right then and there. If you or the male doctors start trying to tell me to just push or relax, I'm going in. Fair warning. I'll listen to advice from the women, but you men don't know jack shit about labor. Hell, I don't know jack shit about it yet. I changed the subject. Are you sure you're ready to return to work? Tevin, we have almost 4 months before I'm due. I'll be a freaking sociopath if I sit at home all that time. I'd rather watch paint dry than watch another episode of the shows that I've been watching. Baby, there are hundreds of cable channels. I know, and half the time I still can't find anything interesting on. Crazy, isn't it? Again, she had a point. Outside of the few sports and news-related shows that I watched, there wasn't much on that interested me either. Gemistry pushed her plate away. I'm tapping out. I pushed mine away as well. I'm tapping out, too. Just because it's a buffet, it doesn't mean that I have to pig out, she said. Agreed. She eyed me with that look. You need to take your missus home and put me to bed. I winked. My pleasure. When we got to our house, I carried Gemistry over the threshold. Then I did what she requested, put her back to bed, and made love to her for the rest of the day. I finally had it all, and I would do whatever it took to keep it. Chapter 33. Love, in its essence, is spiritual fire. Lucius Aeneas Seneca. November 22, 2013 will forever go down on record as being one of the worst days of my life. I will never forget it. We'd been married a little over a month, and we were looking forward to spending our first Thanksgiving together as husband and wife. We had decided that we would spend it alone together. The following year, we would have TJ there and would invite a lot of friends and relatives over. Gemistry was decorating the house early for Christmas. She had enlisted me to put up a 9-foot tree in the living room for us to enjoy in the evenings, and another 7-foot one in the sunroom with lots of lights so that passers-by would see it and hopefully be inspired. She had even almost completed all of her Christmas shopping, so she said. Something told me that once Black Friday sales hit, she would hit the pavement as well with some of her friends. She was really in the spirit. I could tell that she was glad that she had decided to go ahead and marry me. I was walking on air. Seriously, it seemed like my back had straightened and I was walking taller, like someone had snuck into my closet and put some lifts into the heels of all my shoes. Being back at work had truly helped Gemistry out the most, though. I had never seen someone so committed to changing the lives of children. Her hormones were definitely throwing her for a loop, and having to deal with the hectic schedule somehow managed to calm her down instead of overwhelm her. She wasn't the type of woman who appreciated being able to sit at home and chill. And I actually had never been attracted to that kind of woman. I wanted to be able to talk about each other's day at the dinner table every night. To be able to give each other career advice and cuddle when a rough day presented itself from time to time. Even if every day ended up being rough, we would be there for each other. A lot of men, including he who walked between the rows and shall remain nameless, wanted to control their women economically. They wanted their women to have to rely on their income for everything from toothpaste and toilet paper to maintain their hygiene to lipstick and hairbrushes to maintain their looks. I really had nothing against that theory. No man could force a woman to sign up for that, after all. However, my mother had been a stay-at-home wife, and I saw how it had affected her in the end. Daddy had to pay her alimony and child support for a while. Like most women who take the option of not pursuing a career or stacking their own savings, Mom assumed that Daddy would always take care of her. Once all of us, their offspring, were grown and the 5 years of alimony were up, Mom had found herself struggling financially. No money paid into Social Security. No pension plan or 401k. No stocks, no bonds, and no true net worth. She had been given the family home in the divorce, but that was only because Dad didn't want to look bad in front of my sisters and me. He would have never misplaced us out of spite. He had nothing to be spiteful about, really. If not for his actions, there never would have been a divorce. I never blamed my mother for deciding that enough was enough. While my siblings and I surely were not privy to all of what occurred, we knew enough details to determine that Daddy was a disrespectful dog who couldn't control his dick. Mom eventually sold the house after we were all grown. Her funds were so low she needed the equity. When she called to inform me that she planned to sell it, I immediately offered to cover all of the household bills and send her several thousand extra a month to live in the lifestyle she was accustomed to. She refused me, and she refused both of my sisters who made similar offers. I will never forget her exact words to me. Children are not supposed to take care of their parents. Your father and I did not put forth the effort to make you all successful, only for me to have to turn around and financially drain you. I love you, but I will not accept your money. Mom also said that she would be lonely, living in a 7-bedroom mansion by herself. It was pointless. So she sold the house, moved into a condominium in New York City for several years, believing that being in the city that never sleeps would make her life exciting. She had several longtime friends there, but all of them had lives of their own, and she would often feel like the third wheel. Eventually, she tapped out of the equity. A lot of it went toward purchasing the condo, since the cost of living in New York was so high. Then she had to swallow her pride, call Alexis in Florida, and ask if she could move in. It was devastating to her to have to go there, but out of the three of us and where we were located, Florida made the most sense. I sent Mom a few $1,000s a month, despite what she had initially said. I refused to see her worry about money, not the woman who had sacrificed all of her time for me as a child, the woman who made me study and complete my homework on time, the woman who fought for me to be valedictorian when my high school tried to rob me of it because another girl's relatives were important people. While I credited my father for a lot, after all, I had followed in his footsteps and became a vascular surgeon. My mother was the glue that held our family together. Such was the case with many wives who, while married, often felt like single parents because their husbands were workaholics or playaholics. Yes, women were amazing creatures. Women who did everything that they promised to do, who took their marriage vows seriously, and who took raising children even more seriously. And yet, that didn't prevent a lot of men from trying to self-destruct their family units during a divorce. A lot of men who found themselves no longer desired or tolerated by their wives straight up showed their asses. I had seen many male friends and associates do that over the years. I bring all this up for a good reason. November 22nd, 2013, was the day that all of the shit hit the fan in the marriage of my former best friend. And instead of blaming himself, he tried to blame all of his drama on me. I had been out of the operating room less than 10 minutes. I was in the waiting room on the 6th floor, speaking with Mrs. Rosella McCoy, whose husband was in recovery after I had cleared up a clot in his leg. "Is Michael going to be all right?" she asked, as if she was afraid to know the answer. The surgery went very well. I grinned at her. "He's in recovery now. You'll be able to see him in about an hour." She sighed in relief and hugged me. I was still wearing my scrubs. "Oh, my God, thank you." She put her hands in front of her face, palms together as if she was praying, and then lowered them. "So, that's it? No more complications?" I was always cautious not to mislead patients or their families. The fact of the matter was that something could always go wrong after surgery. A person could do anything, from suddenly bleeding profusely to suffering a stroke or heart attack, to slipping into a coma or ending up with no activity in the brain stem, having to be removed from life support within a matter of hours after what seemed like a successful surgery at the time. No matter how skilled a doctor, nature or undiagnosed health conditions could intervene at any moment. "I cleared the clot," I said, being truthful. "We're going to monitor him closely over the next several days. Don't anticipate him coming home until at least Monday. I never release my patients until I'm confident that they'll be okay without standby care." "I understand, Dr. Harris." She was fighting off tears. "I'm just glad Michael's still alive. You hear all those horror stories about people dying on the operating table and..." I rubbed her shoulder gently. "He was a trooper. The surgery was by the book." Mrs. McCoy smiled. "I don't know what I could ever do to repay you. You saved his life." "Ma'am, it was my pleasure to remove the clot. You don't owe me a thing, except taking care of your husband while he recuperates, and discouraging him from doing anything that may cause another one. He's going to have to stop trying to do a lot of heavy lifting, and he needs to retire from that construction job." "I keep telling his hard head that. Now they'll probably force him to retire. But it's for the best. Definitely for the best in this case." I reached into the pocket of my scrub pants and hit the button to turn my cell phone back on. I had retrieved it when I left out of the operating room, but had neglected to turn it on, both my phone and my hospital pager. I felt the initial vibration from it powering up, and then it started going off like fireworks. "Excuse me for a moment," I said to Mrs. McCoy, and then took a few steps to the side so I could read my text messages. All of them were from Gemistry. "Call me ASAP. Call me when you get out of surgery. Call me. It's urgent. Baby, I really need to speak with you the second you get out of the OR. Baby, I fucked up. Courtney knows. Look out for Floyd. She lit his ass up. Are you okay? Have you seen Floyd?" I was standing there shaking my head and about to text Gemistry back when Floyd came ripping through the double doors of the waiting room. Mrs. McCoy seemed taken aback, like the rest of the people sitting there. They all looked around at one another to see if one of them was the one about to receive bad news about a loved one. Floyd had on his white coat and had an angry expression on his face that others probably mistook for anguish. When the majority of them realized that Floyd had locked eyes on me, they relaxed a bit. I walked over to him. "Not here."
"I need to talk to you now."
"Floyd, I just came out of surgery." I tried to maintain my composure. "I'm consulting with a family member. I'm aware of your issue, and we will deal with it later."
"My issue?" he practically yelled, acting all belligerent. "Is that what you call it? An issue? How could you tell?"
I was getting pissed off.
"How could you not tell me about Gemistry being pregnant?"
We stared at each other for a few seconds.
"I can't believe this shit."
Floyd had at least enough sense to prevent that curse word from escaping his lips in front of a dozen people. He scanned the room and realized that his behavior, storming in there as he did, was inappropriate and unprofessional. He glared at me.
"I'll wait for you in your office."
"Fine by me," I said, refusing to break eye contact first. He straightened his coat and stomped off like a child. Mrs. McCoy walked up to me.
"Is everything all right? Both of you seem upset. It's none of my business, but I..."
I looked down at her and forced a chuckle. "Everything is great.
He's a cardiologist, and we're consulting together on a mutual patient. We'll talk about it later. I patted her on the shoulder. I'll have the nurse come and let you know when Mr. McCoy is awake so you can go up and see him. I'll be by to check on him in a little while and give you some updates. Just remember that he's going to be groggy for most of the night until the anesthesia completely wears off. He might not quite be himself. She smiled. As long as he's alive, that's all that matters to me. When he gets home, I'm going to wait on him hand and foot. I'm not letting him overexert himself, no matter what. We're on the same page. I'm sure that I can count on you.
Yes, Dr. Harris, you can definitely count on me.
I walked out of the waiting room, hoping that I could count on myself not to end up getting arrested a few days before Thanksgiving for ramming my foot all the way up Floyd's ass. Chapter 34. Love means to commit yourself without guarantee. Anne Campbell.
What happened? Gemistry asked, meeting me at the laundry room door as I entered the house from the garage. Did you see Floyd?
I walked past her into the kitchen and tossed my briefcase down on the table. Gemistry, I really don't want to talk about this right now, I finally replied.
Let me guess. You're upset with me because I told Courtney about her husband's roaming dick.
I pulled a chair out, sat down, and pulled the bottom of my tie out of my waistband. Then I slipped out of my jacket. Can you hand me a beer, please? I asked politely.
A beer?
She rolled her eyes at me.
Sure, I'll get you a beer, Tevin. That's what wives do when their dictators come home from work.
I sighed as she crossed the room, yanked the refrigerator open, and pulled a Bud Light out of the six-pack on the bottom shelf. I'm not trying to be your dictator, baby. She slammed the bottle down on the table, then sat across from me. We stared at each other for a few seconds.
Oh, my bad.
She stood back up.
Mea culpa. Let me fix your dinner plate. Sorry that I didn't have it on the table before your arrival.
Gemistry walked over to the sink, washed her hands, took out a porcelain plate from the cabinet, then walked over to the stove and started piling what looked to be spaghetti onto it. She put on an oven mitt, yanked a baking sheet out of the oven that had garlic toast on it, and then tossed two pieces beside the pasta on my plate. She walked over to a drawer, pulled it open, and grabbed a fork, tossing it on top of everything else on the plate. I kept my eyes glued to her every move, wondering how she could be upset after throwing my ass to the wolves. If she had kept her mouth shut, or had at least warned me that she was about to spill the beans to Courtney, my day would have gone much smoother. Gemistry set the plate down in front of me, and then retook the other chair. She folded her arms in front of her in defiance and glared at me.
This is silly, I said. All of it. You don't need to be all upset and put yourself and the baby under a bunch of stress. We don't need to be going at each other.
Sure, I was upset with you earlier today. I came out of surgery and read your montage of texts, and then Floyd comes storming into a consultation with a patient's wife. He looks like he's ready to jump me, right there in the waiting room.
Gemistry sucked in a breath. He didn't hit you, did he?
I smirked. He thought about it, I'm sure. But Floyd's not a dummy. I have him by 8 inches and at least 50 pounds of muscle.
So what happened then? She insisted on knowing.
Dinner looks delicious. You mind if I eat it while it's still hot?
You can eat as long as you tell me what the fuck happened while you're doing it.
I was about to sprinkle some pepper on my food when she said that. I put the pepper back down and pushed my plate away. That's what microwaves are for. Okay, fine.
So what happened?
You can probably guess most of it.
You orchestrated the first part of the chaos, after all. Gemistry rolled her eyes again. It was time for her to know. Courtney's always singing Floyd's accolades, talking about how faithful and honest a man he is. I couldn't sit by another second and allow him to pull the wool over her eyes. I couldn't do it and still consider myself her friend. It's not like I gave her any details. Hell, you didn't give me any. All I said was that you had shared with me that Floyd was fucking a lot of women from work. I told her that she needed to be careful. How did it even come up? I asked. Not that it even mattered much. I thought that all of that had boiled over since you'd never said anything. Gemistry calmed down a little. Tevin, I met Courtney for lunch, and she was just leaving her gynecologist's office. She was going on and on about how offended she was that the nurse always asked her if she wanted to be tested for STDs, since her insurance covered most of the tests. She said that she felt like cursing the nurse out, but instead told her that she was married and not promiscuous like that. She said that those kinds of tests are for single people only. I closed my eyes for a few seconds and allowed her last statement to sink in. Now do you see why I had to tell her? Gemistry asked. I opened my eyes. Yes, I understand perfectly. Good. She paused. It wasn't like I woke up this morning intending on turning someone's world upside down. But what if he's given her something? Or if I didn't say anything, and he eventually gave her something. Baby, I hear what you're saying, and I receive it, I said. I receive it, and I agree with what you decided to do. Like I told Floyd, not only today, but also all along, he was dead-ass wrong, and it was inevitable that it would come out. Honestly, it's better that Courtney found out from you, someone who actually cares about her. My mother had to find out from a trifling whore who decided to accost her and throw Daddy's affair up in her face. That's what's so crazy about the entire thing. Time and time again, I told Floyd about how my father's roving eyes and dick had destroyed our family. How love does not equate to doing unnecessary and unwarranted shit simply because you believe you can get away with it. Gemistry sighed. Yeah, I know about all of that. Even though she's not married, I used to preach that same stuff about wilding out for no good reason to winsome. She stared at me like she wanted to add something. Speaking of winsome, she came by the school today. For what? I asked with much disdain. She needs to stay the hell away from both of us. And I made that clear. She came by to wish me happy holidays. You have to understand that we've spent every holiday season together in some way for at least the past decade. That's not going to be the case this year. Winsome means well, but she has to figure out how to make better choices. I told her that I would pray for her and be there for her in spirit. Gemistry giggled. What? I asked. She did make one choice, and she says that it's final. She's now a full lesbian instead of being bisexual. She has sworn off dick for life. I chuckled. Yeah, right. For life, or until she sees a man she can't resist. She said that she has a girlfriend, that she's committed. Some woman named Sharon that she met on the metro train. Great place to pick up people. It's not going to last. You picked me up in a bar after I'd just finished delivering a male-bashing poem, and look at us. You have a point. We both laughed. She also said that she's been going to counseling, Gemistry said, to try to figure out what she wants to truly do with her life and why she keeps making irresponsible decisions. Well, that's good. That's really good. I don't have anything against Winsome, I said. I'm over it. But if you ever let her come back around on the regular, she can't disrespect our marriage. Gemistry sucked in her bottom lip.
Maybe sometime. She's my ace and I love her and all. And I miss her. But right now I want to concentrate on establishing our life together and having a healthy baby. We have so much to still do to the nursery. Her statement about the nursery sounded accusatory, not to mention the look she was giving me, as though I should have been ashamed. I lifted my brow. Don't look at me. You're the one who keeps changing your mind about the color scheme and going all out by having that man paint a mural. We can't put any furniture in there until the walls are painted and dried. You need to hurry up. It might take me a couple of months to put that fancy crib together that you picked out. Yeah, I've heard some nightmares about men trying to follow the instructions to put together cribs. Even for surgeons, common sense isn't always so common. Oh, so now you got jokes, I chuckled. There are a lot of parts, but if I can put a human being back together, I can damn sure get that crib up without tearing up something. I can't wait to see that. Gemistry stood up, took my plate, and walked over to the microwave to heat it up. As it was rotating on the glass base, I asked, aren't you going to fix yourself a plate? Baby, please. I've had 3 servings and 4 pieces of bread already. I'm going for round 3 when Criminal Minds comes on at 9. I took a swig of my beer. What time do we have Lamaze class tomorrow? Chapter 35. To love abundantly is to live abundantly, and to love forever is to live forever. Henry Drummond. We arrived in New Orleans 2 days after Christmas. I was lost about what to get Gemistry for a present, but the choice became obvious when her Nissan Rouge was diagnosed with a bad transmission. Rather than go through all of that, I insisted that she let me purchase her a new vehicle. I wanted to surprise her, but decided against it. I wanted her to get what she wanted. She was the one who would have to drive it, and she would be carting my seed, TJ, around in it, so it had to be safe. Being quite nerdish when it comes to wanting to know every detail about something before I make a high price tag purchase, I surfed the internet and landed on the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety website and printed off their list for the top safety picks for 2014. When Gemistry had arrived home on her last day before winter break, we went over it together, selected a few to go check out, and ended up purchasing a forest green Acura MDX with a butter leather interior. Gemistry surprised me with a Breitling Chronomat watch that had to cost at least $6,000. I was not expecting such a lavish gift. Even though she made about $140,000 a year as a principal, I still didn't think she had to go that far. She laughed at me when I tried to get her to take it back. 2 things, she said. It's engraved, and if you weren't so busy complaining, you would have seen that already. Secondly, you refuse to let me pay any bills around this Mickey, so I need to spend money on something. You already bought me a car, so I bought you a watch. She planted a kiss on my lips as we lay in bed together when she had presented me with the present. So, Dr. Harris, read your inscription and miss me with all that. We both laughed as I removed the watch from the case and flipped it over. It read, Tevin, I want all of my days to begin and end with you. Always yours, Gemistry. That's very sweet, baby. Glad you like it. Gemistry reached down under the blanket and started rubbing my dick. Enough of the sappy romantic talk. Fuck me like I stole something. I chuckled and reached under the blanket and into her panties and started playing with her pussy. You're always so wet. That's because you make me that way. She started kissing and licking all over my chest. A lot of women sleep on the fact that men are aroused by that. Just because we don't have tits, it doesn't mean that we're not sensitive there. Gemistry knew that it excited me. I started moaning as we continued to play with each other's privates. "You're gonna drive me insane," I whispered, and I was not even lying. Her scent was driving me wild as we played with each other's tongues. Gemistry tossed the blanket completely off the bed, slid out of her panties while I kicked my pajama pants off, and then impaled her pussy on my dick. She started grinding on me like she was a windmill. Then she started snapping her pussy onto my dick. Crazy. "You like that, baby?" she asked, finally breaking the kiss and coming up for air. "You know I like it. Work that pussy, sweetheart." She dug her fingertips into my chest and started pouncing up and down on my dick. She threw her head back, and I watched her breasts, getting more and more succulent as her pregnancy progressed, swirl around in circles. I grabbed a hold of them and squeezed. She let out a moan of pleasure. "Oh, Tevin," she screamed out as she came the first time and kept going. I let go of one of her breasts and rested my hand on her stomach, trying to see if the baby was moving or seemed like he was under stress. Even though I had been given all of the reassurances in the world, I would be concerned until TJ made his entrance into the world. But I had stopped talking about it all the time. I didn't want to speak anything negative into existence. Tevin Harris, Jr. was going to be the man, and Tevin Harris, Sr. was going to be the man who kept his eye on the man. I was going to make sure that he had everything he could ever want, but he wasn't going to be a spoiled brat either. I was going to have to find that perfect balance. He was going to play sports, basketball, baseball, football, soccer, and whatever else we could fit in. He wasn't going to sit on his ass playing video games all day and end up with an obesity issue by the time he hit double digits in age. He was going to learn how to read and write early. He was going to learn his math facts so he never had to struggle once more difficult things were introduced. Like I said, the man. I was thinking all of those things when I felt him kick. Then I immediately faked like I was ejaculating so Gemistry would feel like she had done what needed to be done to please me. I was only probably 60 to 90 seconds from busting a nut anyway, but lately I had been putting on pretenses every now and then, finishing myself off later or just allowing my dick to deflate and calling it a day. Gemistry collapsed beside me, breathing heavily. "Nothing like early morning dick action." "You have a potty mouth," I said, then chuckled. "If your students heard you talking like that, they'd talk mad shit." "My mouth is nothing compared to theirs. They are doing the most these days. When the spring semester starts, I'm gonna have to crack down on kids sneaking off into vacant classrooms and closets, trying to fuck or suck all over each other." I glanced over at Gemistry. "Really? It's gotten ridiculous. Parents have no clue what their kids are doing at school, or before and after school. I can only do so much, and I can't prevent them from doing whatever off the premises. But I'll be damned if they continue to disrespect Medgar Evers High." "Go on with your bad self, Joe Clark," I joked, referencing the biopic Lean on Me and the no-nonsense principal who turned a lot of lives around despite some parents disagreeing with his strict policies. Gemistry laughed and started giving me a hand job. "What are you doing?" I asked, surprised. "We just finished. You're not ready for another round, are you?" "No, I'm not. But you can't fool me, Tevin. I know you didn't come. So I'm helping you out. Your fake nutting face is nothing like the real thing. It's a toned-down version."
She giggled and started moving her hand faster and faster.
I appreciate you trying to prevent my coochie from undergoing a good dick pounding, but you don't need to have to do things by yourself.
Not as long.